This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Who says Greece needs to stay on the euro? From APM, I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. It's the 1st of October, Monday. Welcome to the new week. Also coming up on the show, everybody's got their manufacturing data out today. We'll give you the good, the bad, and the ugly. And something rather unusual is about to go on sale tonight at Cowboy Stadium in Dallas. I won't spoil the surprise just yet. First of all, today the Greek government submitted its budget for 2013, and it includes $15 billion in controversial cuts spread over the next 2 years. The country's trying to meet the conditions imposed by its creditors elsewhere in Europe. The budget also projects the Greek economy will shrink 3.8% next year. That'll be the sixth year in a row that Greece's economy has gotten smaller rather than bigger. Now, an enormous effort is underway. We tell you about it, seems like, almost every day to keep Greece and other struggling European countries on the euro currency, inside the eurozone, right, as we say. It would be easy to conclude that the alternative to that is somehow unthinkable. And yet, there are those who are not only thinking about it, they are calling for it. One of them is Jack Goldstone. He's a professor of public policy and a senior fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Good to talk with you.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
So, Jack, I mean, the drumbeat day after day is about keeping Greece in the eurozone. You're saying just let them go.
I think so. Greece is like a homeowner who's way underwater on their mortgage. They just owe so much money that the prospect of being able to repay it seems very distant to me. But you don't want Greece to just throw away the keys and run off in an uncontrolled manner. I do think it's possible to do a managed exit of Greece from the euro currency zone without leaving the European Union. Perhaps with even plans to return to the currency once they get their fiscal house in order.
Yeah, you've pitched this notion of a 10-year temporary withdrawal from the euro. How would that work?
So the idea would be once you pull out of the euro, it creates a shock, but that lowers the price of goods and services in Greece, makes them more competitive, and then they'd start to make more money with the devalued lower currency. And as they make more money, they can build up a fiscal cushion. And then when they're sound financially, they could reapply to join the single currency if that's what they desire.
Does your logic end with Greece, or are there other countries that should leave / be kicked out of the euro, at least for a while?
Well, nobody should be kicked out. What we want is a voluntary system that everybody accepts this is the best step to restore fiscal solvency and strength. I think Spain might be forced to consider that, especially with the regions revolting in the country. But again, this is not something that one does lightly. Greece is in by far the worst situation of any of the countries in the eurozone, and that's why I think they might need this kind of special course.
Jack Goldstone is a senior fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. He also blogs at newpopulationbomb.com. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you so much.
All right, let's do the numbers. Well, U.S. markets are moving higher in the first hours of trading. The Dow Industrials are up more than 1%. The S&P 500 up about 0.8%. And the NASDAQ index starting the day up about 0.5%. Markets were similarly up in Europe and down in Japan for reasons we'll talk about in a little bit. We had a bad surprise in U.S. construction spending this morning, which fell in August by the most in a year. The problem was not houses, though, but non-residential building. Investors may be looking past that to appreciate two manufacturing indexes. Both show expansion here in the U.S., and the ISM index, that's one of them, just out this hour, shows a good pickup after three sluggish months. And we also have a European manufacturing index out today that shows the 14th straight month of contraction there. We've also got the EU's new unemployment report. That shows 34,000 more Europeans out of work in August, including lots of young people. That's something the EU officials call an economic and social disaster.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
Stock markets in China were closed today for holidays, and perhaps it's just as well. A new manufacturing survey there shows factory activity slowed for the second straight month. But markets were open for business to greet the bad news in Japan. A survey by the Japanese Central Bank found sagging confidence, particularly among manufacturers there. Rupert Wingfield Hayes is the BBC's correspondent in Tokyo. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk to you.
So let's start with this Japanese business sentiment report. What's that say? And give us some context, if you would.
So this is called the Tankan Survey, and it's a survey of business sentiment. And the results of today's survey, as released today, are that manufacturers are -3 on average, which says that they basically are feeling pretty gloomy about the future. But on the non-manufacturing sector, a +8. So Japan's economy, certainly its famous manufacturing economy, is seeing, you know, quite a dramatic slowdown. And there's fears here that Japan could fall into recession.
If manufacturing sentiment is gloomy, non-manufacturing sentiment less gloomy, I guess. Give me an example of what types of businesses maybe are doing okay.
Well, certainly retailers seem to be doing okay in Japan. Japanese consumers are still spending money. One of the most famous sort of consumer groups in Japan is young women, and they appear to be going out and buying cosmetics and buying fashions. People have also been buying cars this year in Japan because the Japanese government has been trying to encourage people to buy cars that are more fuel efficient. It's been given heavy subsidies to people to go out and buy something like a Prius. Those subsidies are now coming to an end. So that is, again, expected to drop off quite rapidly now.
Japan and China are feuding over territory right now. Is there considerable economic fallout from that?
Well, there's the potential for there to be, and that's a real concern here in Japan. You know, the United States always used to be the biggest export market for Japanese products for years and years and years and years. That has now changed. In the last few years, China has become Japan's number one export market. So a political fallout, if it continues to be serious, could have really big knock-on effects for the Japanese economy.
The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes in Tokyo. Thank you.
Thank you.
A bit more Japan news here. A weekend explosion that destroyed a factory near Osaka threatens to disrupt the world's disposable diaper market. Nippon Shokubai was working at full capacity, turning out 20% apparently of the world supply of a super absorbent material that's used in diapers. The plant was a particularly important supplier for China. Changing gears here, the price of oil is on the rise again this morning, and that has some folks calling for the White House to release oil from its stockpile. Marketplace's Eve Troe unravels some of the strategy behind the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
The U.S. created the Strategic Petroleum Reserve after the oil embargo of the 1970s. Blake Clayton at the Council on Foreign Relations says it was the first time America faced its utter dependence on oil. And realized
these kinds of oil shortages can just wreak havoc on the national economy.
The official goal of the reserve remains to keep oil flowing in case of emergency.
Not just when supply is low, but when that shortage means that the national economy could actually be derailed.
But the Strategic Petroleum Reserve has another unofficial function. The White House can tease the oil market with its 700 million barrels of sweet and sour crude just sitting there. That's why you hear officials and the president talk about the petroleum reserve like this.
As we have said repeatedly, while this is an option that remains on the table,
that remains an option that's on the table.
And we will continue to coordinate closely with our international partners to keep all options on the table.
What they're really saying is, don't forget, we can tap that crude oil anytime we want. If they do tap the reserve, the extra oil on the market will make prices drop right away. If oil traders bet on too high a price, they'll lose money when the U.S. releases its reserves, and they know not the day nor the hour that could happen. James Kohler with the Truman National Security Project says last June, when President Obama put 30 million barrels on the market,
prices did drop, futures prices did drop for about a week there, and then we were back up to where we were before.
That's not a bad thing. The reserve is actually meant to stabilize oil prices.
Probably the strongest component of it is in terms of the threat to use it rather than the actual usage of it. It keeps people in check much more so than an actual release of oil.
The Strategic Petroleum Reserve may be more powerful on the table than in the pipeline. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
It is Monday, and there's a new addition coming to Monday Night Football, at least if you live in Dallas, where the game is tonight. That is, of course, beyond the return of the union referees. Tonight at Dallas Cowboys Stadium, fans can buy all the usual ballpark staples: beer, hot dogs, bras, panties. Did I just say that? Yes, I did. And Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji tells you why.
Victoria's Secret is opening a store at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium today.
The Dallas Cowboy franchise is just a whole different animal than the rest of the NFL.
Jen Drexler is a women's consumer behavior expert. She points to the Cowboys cheerleaders, the Victoria's Secret models of the gridiron, who brought hot pants and bra tops to the stadium long ago.
Welcome to Cowboys Stadium!
If any franchise was going to pull it off, they have the best shot.
The Victoria's Secret store will sell Cowboys-themed thong underwear, along with hoodies and cropped jerseys for women.
They deserve some credit for this. This is bold.
Analyst Wendy Liebman from WSL Strategic Retail says online shopping, mixed with a sluggish economy, makes opening a store tough. She says brands should steal from Victoria's Secret's playbook. Selling undies in a football stadium that seats 80,000 might just be a
touchdown! Touchdown!
I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
As we wrap up here, a couple of IKEA items in the news this morning, one of which I imagine the Swedish furniture company is happy about. The other one, maybe not so glad to have out there. First of all, IKEA says by 2016, it is going to sell only LED light bulbs in its stores in order to cut down on global carbon emissions, that kind of thing, which is a good idea, I guess. Those things are pretty darn expensive, last I looked. The other item, IKEA is in a little bit of trouble. When it was discovered that IKEA is in a little bit of trouble because it was found out that they've been airbrushing women out of their catalogs for Saudi Arabia. Basically, they take the same images that they use for Western catalogs and just remove anyone female. IKEA, sort of caught in the act or discovering the problem at least, says that did not conform with their values and they're not going to do it anymore. Finally, leave it to the Japanese, who else, to study how cuteness affects our work productivity. According to the Wall Street Journal's Japan Real Time blog, researchers showed pictures of animals to students and then they gave the students a series of concentration tests. The people who saw pictures of puppies and kittens performed 44% better than those who saw grown-up dogs and cats. Just be sure to have a printout of that study close at hand next time your boss walks up behind you when you're watching YouTube kitten videos on the job. That's all for the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich. We're coming to you from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.